Welcome to Discovery with Babbitt Ranches. Discovery is all things cowboy essence. People at their best, accomplishing extraordinary achievements. I'm your host, Bonnie Stevens, filling in for Billy Cordasco. Today we're talking about leadership, core values, and business culture, and what we can learn from our past as we welcome the opportunities of today and look with hope and enthusiasm to the future. Babbitt Ranches is a rare family business that has been operating for nearly 140 years. This family business has mastered what it means to cherish its heritage, be present, be relevant, and open to today's needs, while also being an active participant in shaping the future.
The one thing that is the thread for all of these folks is their values, their principles, and their character qualities that they held on to no matter what situation, what conditions, or what seasons they were in.
That soundbite is from today's guest, Babbitt Ranch's President and General Manager, Billy Cordasco. We'll hear more in a moment from this 21st century business leader and visionary, but first, Babbitt Ranches acknowledges the six renewable energy development companies that together with Babbitt Ranches are creating the largest wind and solar energy center in Arizona and one of the largest in the country. Billy Cordasco, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Bonnie. It's always so awesome to see you.
It feels a little different, right, to be on the other side of the microphone.
Sure.
You're our guest today, and we'll hear about going back about 400 years. And that was when the earliest relative of the Babbitt family arrived in the New World from England. And that was a 12-year-old boy, Edward Bobbitt. Now, that last name was changed later to Babbitt. But he arrived near Plymouth Rock on a ship from England in 1639. This was a sailing vessel, something that must have been similar to the Mayflower, which arrived only 19 years earlier. As you've contemplated young Ed's history, his circumstances, the decisions, and his life, and there are several important lessons that we can all learn. Let's dive in with what life was probably like for young Edward in 17th century England.
Okay, you bet. Hard to imagine 1639 to begin with. It would have been pretty different than it is today for all of us. And at the same time, a lot of it would have been similar as far as opportunities and the way that you had to just kind of keep yourself moving forward with life and different decisions you made. And in his case, what's interesting is that he was a 12-year-old boy, and it's unknown whether he was with family on this trip, maybe his aunt or uncle maybe or something, but that his parents were not. There were no other names Bobbitt on the registry. So to start with, either this young man was orphaned or for some reason or another encouraged to go off with these folks to a new place and start a new life. And regardless of which, he was leaving everything behind.
Everything
he had, maybe even his dog. I mean, his buddies, where he played and his familiarity with everything, was simply just going to be behind him, and he would never see it again. He would have walked up to this vessel, this sailing vessel, and imagine yourself with just the ringing of clanking in the masts and birds squawking and people hustling around loading the ships with supplies and all these other things, and maybe the anticipation of getting on a boat. For all I know, he didn't even know how to swim, much less where's the boat going. First thing he'd had to do would walk up to that little gangplank, that little tiny bridge, so to speak, that went from the land up to the boat and walk his way up, get to the top of that thing only to peer across a deck with all these sailors and other folks hustling and bustling around and sails doing this and that and ropes doing this and that and whatever and being showed where he's going to be staying for weeks as they go across the Atlantic Ocean. And then to endure that, get seasick and...
Not probably comfortable cabins and fine dining.
No, it would have been
not
pretty,
a cruise.
Pretty rough routine. You would have just had to endure that, both with probably a little going back and forth between your fear a little bit, your potential hope, and where you're headed. But eventually they got across the ocean, and he would have gone onto the land there and said, oh, where do I eat dinner tonight and where do I sleep? So that's kind of a story of a real pioneer.
Let's go back to that gangplank moment.
Yep.
Now, we all have gangplank moments, right?
Yes.
We all step onto that path that only goes one way. You know, once you've set your foot on that, there's no going back. There's probably people behind you eager to get on. And so you're just moving with the flow, going across, looking down and seeing that deep black ocean beneath you. Behind you is no more. You've left the past. Ahead of you, just a few steps, is the unknown. So put that in today's world. What is that like for us?
Well, it's very similar. I think I mentioned that earlier, that as it was in 1639, as far as lifestyle, it was still a lot of the same type of life. We all approach this gangplank moment where we're going to leave everything behind. We've made the decision that we're going to do it. But then there's kind of that second decision, right, where I'm actually doing it. It's like getting in the car.
No turning back.
Getting on the airplane or, you know, right. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting that when you do walk between a bridge of some sorts, between a deck or a dock onto a boat, there's that real interesting gap between the land and the boat itself, even though it's tethered up next to the dock or something. But you look down there and it's just dark and deep and you just don't know what's right there. And it's just that moment that you walk over and you did what you were going to set out to do. And then, of course, you get on that boat and then it's just starting all over from there too, right? Just the journey to get to where you need to go. Yes, and that's a real reflection for most of us in our lives.
I know you think this, that Ed must have had a vision. He must have had an idea of what could be better. And from what I understand, perhaps being a poor working class person in 17th century England was not the best quality of life. I'm sure it was crowded, cramped, damp, cold, maybe not a lot of food, maybe a lot of illnesses. You know, from what I understand, it could have been a pretty miserable life. But young Ed had other ideas.
Well, he did. And of course, he was a young boy, and so he had some catching up to do once he got to the new land. Guessing he was pretty resourceful right off the bat. They crawled their way through some forest and headed west just that little bit. And that's always been a theme for us at the Babbitt Ranches community, is that heading west. But he kept heading into the west. They went and settled in this area, named the area Taunton, which is now Taunton, Massachusetts.
Okay.
They started from scratch, and I'm sure the first priorities were for food and shelter. But as these folks got all that put together and got their communities figured out and so on and so forth, they found some raw material for iron and getting a forge set up, and they became one of the first iron foundries in Massachusetts, which became a really big deal.
It's amazing what he was able to accomplish from his meager beginnings. And you've given that a name, that mindset, that gives you the strength and the fortitude to move forward into the unknown despite uncertainties. What do you call that? Well, First generation mindset.
Yeah, right. That's a critical piece to the puzzle for these folks that went and endured and forged their way through pioneering and adventure and journey situations, is that you don't know. You are going to be uncomfortable. There is risk, certainly uncertainty, pretty much all throughout every day. Yet at the same time, there's this disposition that, you know what, I am finding some meaning in this, and I am finding that I am a part of something bigger than myself some way or another, and I have a lot of hope and joy in what I'm doing. And I think that if we carried that with us every day as we adventure into new areas and new things, or even old ones that maybe we need to freshen up just a little bit, to grab a hold of that first generation mindset and let it rip.
And you capture that so beautifully in the constitution of Babbitt Ranches with cowboy essence, which identifies a lot of those character qualities that you need and that you have to develop in your own mind to be in that first generation mindset. And I think you've coined the phrase 1GM.
Yep, first generation mindset.
Well, as you pointed out in your experience, more than 30 years as president and general manager of Babbitt Ranches, change is exciting. But probably for all of us, change comes with certainly uncertainty, some fear. And even you've identified loss. Change is a loss of something. For young Ed, it was a loss of his childhood, really.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we leave something behind and we head forward, it's not always a deliberate decision that we made that pushes us forward to leave something behind. Sometimes things can happen in our lives that we didn't expect and so on, and create that change in and of itself. Regardless of which, though, is that in both cases, and really, there is a sense of loss when you move away from something. Hopefully it's a mere reflection of the love and joy that you received from whatever it is that you have that you're losing. But at the same time, it is a part of the equation that as we move forward into new territory, we're going to feel a loss at the same time as we do the hope and joy of doing something that feels right to do as well. So yes, it's important to acknowledge and to appreciate that loss is a big part of life and that it's fair enough.
Now I have to think about young Ed, and when somebody yelled out, "Land ho," as I'm guessing that's what they did, his heart must have just leaped.
Yeah. Well, you know, you think about it, you go across the ocean for weeks at a time. Maybe you didn't even get to come up on deck. I really don't know what the routines were for everybody, but you'd have felt pretty tight going across that ocean and waves and storms and standing still with no wind and hot and all these different things, right? For a lot of us, sometimes you make a decision to move forward in something that's going to take some time, and you get about 3/4 of the way and you think to yourself, man, really? What am I doing?
Turn this ship around.
You know, it's like, what do I got on my mind here? And you have to battle that just a little bit to stay in the pocket, to stay with it, keep going and this and that. But as you get closer to your destination, you're going to start to feel that switch. You're going to start thinking, you know what? I'm going to make it. You know, I think I'm going to get there. You know, I think this is going to work out. As you say, somebody hollers out, hey, there it is. Your heart would leap. It would get, you know, all that joy and butterflies and all the excitement running through it. And you would just then have, at least for a while, probably let go of the journey that it took to get there. And you'd just be filled with optimism.
And that is the first generation mindset. And with that 1GM, when young Ed landed, it wasn't time for him to go camp in the woods. It was time to really get to work.
Yeah, so you don't get to hang out.
Go
very
hang out,
long.
Look at the
you
stars.
You don't get to camp out once you get there. You got to get it going, right?
Wow. Okay. Well, that first generation mindset shows up again in a big way in the Babbitt family in 1886. Tell us about these young men growing up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and being in their grocery store, which was the family business. And one day, you know, there was a lot of talk about what was going out west, and they were getting excited, but there was one person in particular that really put them over the top.
This is a great example in this case where they had loss. These five boys had recently lost their mom and their sister to a flu or something or another. They had lost their dad years before. So yes, there would have been just that little bit of a, hey, you know what? We've lost our mom. We lost our sister. We're kind of here and this and that. And then, yes, this fella shows up and kind of off the train, so to speak, from the West. And he shows up and he is filled with enthusiasm and all of the great expectations of success that a person could possibly ever have, telling these guys, you need to go out west and start up. And he had pamphlets with them that would say all these things, land free, land cheap, whatever, make your fortunes, all these things and all. And these guys, yeah, they got wide-eyed. They'd been running their grocery store. They'd been doing everything just the way they were supposed to. They had a butcher shop and a farm and a few other things, but they were probably from teens to the middle 20s. So they were right there at that age where we got a chance to do something right here. And so what they did is they started putting plans together. And again, the adventure on this, again, that first generation mindset, it's not guaranteed. That's what's so powerful about it. There's no guarantee in a first generation mindset. So these guys make a plan to go look for some land and start up their ranch, and they sent their brother David out. And he spent a long time going all over in 1884.
And David was the oldest.
He was the oldest. He went all over. I mean, I think from Texas to Montana, maybe to California, all around.
He was seriously looking.
He was seriously looking. They were dedicated. This was something they were going to try to make happen. And he went everywhere. So by the end of his tour, they did not have a place to go. And he went back home to Cincinnati. And they had to talk about it. Did we miss the timing of it? Were we not looking in the right place? Or did we not have this quite right?
They were on the gangplank.
They were on the gangplank for sure. Kind of in a boat that maybe got to go here and there before it could find land. So they had settled back and got their routines going. But that appetite and that draw to get back out west and to figure it out still was there. And so they made an additional plan, second plan. In this case, David and Billy both got on the train and they went all around. It's one of my most favorite stories, the second trip, because what happened here is they went to all the places. They'd had plenty of time from the first trip that David had made out to when he got back to Cincinnati, then draw up the maps, look at their routes, you know, make contacts across the western United States, do all of their due diligence and planning and everything else. The two of them get back on a train in 1886 and go back out. Well, they went to all the places that they planned on going, and what they found was is that the price for land had gone up. Some of the ranches they were looking at to buy already been purchased, and they ended up in the train station in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and they were basically done, and they were headed back home.
I can just imagine, I can just see them, their attitude, their body language just sunk.
Well, sad. I think they would have been deflated. They'd spent several years on this adventure, and I think for all of us to be mindful of that, because sometimes we spend a lot of time trying to get somewhere. We know we want to get there. We're just poking buttons and seeing what we could happen out of it. Well, the train station teller came over to him, had a nice little visit with him and all. And through that visit, he said, well, shoot, you guys, before you go back to Cincinnati, why don't you just get on over there to Flagstaff and check it out before you head out? The railroad goes there now, and this and that might not have during the first trip. So they talked to each other and probably needed to convince each other just that little bit. They were ready to go home and call it good. As fate would have it, they said, okay, well, let's make the trip over to Flagstaff and see what we can turn up there. And so these guys get on the train and they're heading over to Flagstaff, and David is going between the railroad cars. He tells Billy he's going to go get something to eat or something or another, and he needs to go to a different car. And as he goes across between the two railroad cars, the gust of wind blew his hat off and out into the desert. And I just think that sometimes we can get to that spot where like figures, you know,
it's kind of the last straw.
You're just really? You know what? Yeah. Figures. Yeah. And so probably went back in there and sat down and Billy's saying, where's your hat? And he'd probably be like, don't ask. And so then they get to Flagstaff. And what is just remarkable is they get off the train and the town had recently burned completely down. There's just these tents here and there and this and that. And I think David was probably fair enough with Billy and said, hey, let's not unpack our bags. We're not staying long. I think that's a real interesting thing because very quickly from there, they met the right people, the right timing with a cattle herd that showed up into town. And they met some folks that had some pasture and water ready for those cattle to go to and this and that. They ended up sending a telegram to their brother saying, hey, pack your things. We found our home. I'm thinking that night, David and Billy went to dinner and they were sitting there thinking, okay, we got it going and this and that. And David probably looked over at Billy and said, you know what? I think tomorrow I'm going to go buy myself a new hat.
Wow, what a change of attitude. You know, it reminds me of looking at what is and seeing something very discouraging, but then seeing through that to what could be.
Yeah.
So things were starting to turn around, but there were more adventures ahead. I mean, with that first generation mindset, you don't just get to go, as we've mentioned, go camp out. You have to keep going, keep striving, keep exploring. So what happened next?
So these guys, they find their cattle and they're ready to go, but they need some pasture and they need some water. And they met up with these two fellas who said that they would have some potential water sources for them and some pasture. So they got on their horseback and they all went up. And it ended up being about 3/4 of the way up the San Francisco Peaks Mountains north of Flagstaff. So it was quite a ways up. And it would have been somewhere towards the end of April, maybe at the most first part of May.
And we know it still snows.
It's still snow.
It's
cold. It would definitely be cold. And there probably was snow where they were or a little bit higher. You know, there would have been snow. And so these guys, they ride up there and there's a spring, Jack Smith Spring. And they look around and they talk about it and all. And they decide, you know what? This is going to be perfect for us. So Billy and David and those guys probably shook hands and did their thing and stuff. They realized, you know what, it's kind of late in the afternoon for us to ride horseback back to Flagstaff. It would be better if we waited until the morning to set back out. There wouldn't have been any roads. There wouldn't have been anything. Arizona Territory.
Now, Billy would have loved the idea of staying overnight, right? Wasn't he all about being outdoors?
Well, he was, but at the same time, you know, you have to think about it. Again, it would have been cold. As it turned out, it was cold. And that next morning, when they woke up, they wanted to try to get a little water boiled for some coffee, maybe heat up something else they had with them or something, but warm up a little bit. Well, what they found is that between the four of them, they only had 3 matches. And what was really interesting about that is that these pioneer guys that Billy and David had hooked up with to go up in there and stuff didn't have any matches. Billy didn't end up having any matches. David had all 3 matches. So they stare at each other for a moment or two. And Jack Smith says, well, you know, maybe I should light the fire. Fair enough. You got this guy that this is what he does. He lives out in the middle of nowhere. We're from Cincinnati. So David gratefully hands Jack Smith these matches. And Jack goes down there to light the fire. And the first match went out. And so those guys probably chuckled just a bit at him and probably like, okay, we'll get it going this one, you know. And yeah. He went down and he lit that second match. And this match may have ignited, but it didn't get a fire going. So there's the last match, the third match.
The third, just one more left.
One match left. And these guys, certainly cold.
They're getting crabby now. They want
some coffee. They're thinking, you know, let's come on, man. It's something you're supposed to have been able to handle. We need this to happen. Jack Smith went to light that third match. And as he was getting ready to do so, David reached down and said, I will light this one. And that for me is probably one of the coolest things I've ever heard. Because he was taking everything that they had done, all their exploring, all the trips he made around the country, all the different things they were doing to try to get themselves resituated in a place with a ranch, some cattle, all these other things. Yeah, they're cold, and I don't know if they could have survived it or whatever all else, but the point to it is that he was the one who said, I will light that last match. Whatever happens here, it is all on me. And appreciating at the same time the responsibility for everybody else that he had to get the fire lit. So he went down and he lit that match and he went down and torched up that fire. And those guys had a great old cup of coffee and whatever else got warmed up and this and that. But what happened from that is that he then, and Billy too, because I mean, certainly Billy was a part of that, was, you know what, we can do this. We just absorbed everything that we've just done and just packed it inside of us. And now, you know what, we can do it. And they did. The way I like to look at it is that match really represented a passion, the burning inside of them to really go and just let it rip and do everything they possibly could, leaving everything of who they were and everything they had to the best possible good. I just think it's an extraordinary story.
Yeah, it feels like at that moment, David Babbitt stepped into his leadership role as a rancher in the Arizona Territory. He really owned it at that moment. He was going to take charge, and he was going to make things right and make them better and forge forward.
Yeah, that's right. So now I kind of have a thing where I feel like we all have a match to give to the next generation and give it to them and say, hey, here's your fourth match. You get the fourth match. You get the match. You get to light when you're ready. See where it takes you.
Beautiful symbolism. Again, we hear the story of excitement about creating the future, taking the risk, feeling the loss of what was, pushing through fear and uncertainty of what may be to come, and putting in the work to create something that's bigger than ourselves. Today, Babbitt Ranches is shaping the future again. That first generation mindset reared up in the 1990s when the family business realized it was a land company, not just limited as a cattle operation, and the land held the promise of what was to come, what no one could see at the time in many cases. And that's all about that multiple bottom line again.
Oh boy, knowing those values for sure, because you know, the one thing between Ed Babbitt and the folks he was with when they left England area, and then when you have these guys leaving from Cincinnati and heading west, the one thing that is the thread for all of these folks is their values, their principles, and their character qualities that they held on to no matter what situation, what conditions, or what seasons they were in.
Well, it's pretty incredible to think about the dreams Ed Babbitt had in the 1600s, the actions he took, and the legacy that he began 400 years ago. I mean, my goodness, it included the ironworks company that you mentioned, a cattle ranching empire 250 years later, and that stretched at the time. I mean, it was the Western United States. It was Kansas and Montana and Los Angeles and across Arizona. I mean, that empire was absolutely huge. Today, Babbitt Ranches continues to raise cattle and is also at the forefront of renewable energy generation for a cleaner future. Plus, there are more than 500 Babbitt descendants of Edward who have made their mark in politics, in the arts, in education, the entertainment industry, the real estate development, many other areas. I mean, it's really incredible how from this 12-year-old boy, so much has changed to shape the future.
It is really something else. One of the brothers, when they got to Flagstaff, Ed, he went back to Cincinnati. And so a whole bunch of the roots and a whole bunch of the Babbitt family has tree branches over there in Cincinnati as well, and all of what they've accomplished. And you can't say enough about all that crowd there as well.
All across the United States, right? I mean, more than 500 Babbitts, that's a lot. And it's all because of that first generation mindset, that one GM. I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about that in the future. Thank you, Billy Cordasco, President and General Manager of Babbitt Ranches, for sharing valuable leadership lessons with us today on Discovery with Babbitt Ranches, the first generation mindset, understanding change and loss, creating something new that's bigger than yourself, and heeding that go west spirit no matter what our circumstances are.
Thank you so very much, Bonnie. This has been fun.
Discovery with Babbitt Ranches acknowledges the renewable energy companies working hard to generate green energy for a cleaner future. Discovery with Babbitt Ranches is a podcast exploring all things cowboy essence in land stewardship, conservation, science, agriculture, recreation, business, and community. I'm Bonnie Stevens, in for Billy Cordasco.